Thank you for downloading the Sparkwood and 21 podcast. We are covering the television series Twin Peaks. We are from No Ship Network. I am your host, Em.
And I'm your host, Steve. Spoiler warning, we are not a spoiler-free podcast. We would love to have you listen, but if you haven't seen the show, don't listen until you watch the entire series. You have been warned. For the remainder of the podcast, please stay on the bike.
And don't steal the corn. We got a new review that was all of our reviews were awesome, but that last review we just got came on a really good day, and some other things happened with our other podcast, and I thought I would die from happiness, and thank you. We really love it.
Reviews, so, good reviews are the way to M's heart.
And so is feedback, and we do have a feedback section today. Yes, feedback, please write into noshipnetwork@gmail.com. Also, if you like this podcast, or even if you don't like this podcast, you can go and review us at iTunes. That is actually the best way to support us. Okay, in this podcast, we are discussing Twin Peaks Season 2, Episode 5, The Orchid's Curse. It's written by Barry Pullman and directed by Graham Clifford, who actually directed Gleam in the Cube, a movie from our
youth. Mm-hmm. Skateboarding movie.
Yes.
I remember wanting to see that movie so bad. And then years later, when I finally got to see it, I was just like, it's not very good. But it's one of those things, like, if you had seen it when you really wanted to, it would have been impressive. But then when you finally get a little bit older and you get a chance to rent it on VHS, you're like, meh.
It was like the right when Christian Slater was becoming the It Boy.
Those were the days.
Yep. So anyway, what are your thoughts on this episode?
I like this episode a lot. I thought it was a pretty solid episode, especially compared to the last episode. There wasn't a lot of comedy in it. There wasn't a lot of slapstick, goofy humor. It stayed more on point, and it pushed the story forward in a significant fashion. And I think we lacked that in the last episode, because last episode there was a lot of goofiness to it.
Yeah, there was.
You know, and I just didn't feel like it was primetime Twin Peaks. And this is still Season 2 caliber as far as what's going on, and you know, what versus what we would want to see going on, but I think it's a step above last week's episode.
We open with a view of the Great Northern we do not see very often.
No, this is kind of like the parking lot view. It's a lot less majestic than the waterfall view.
Yeah, and the only other time I can recall the view is when in the pilot, when Audrey is getting in the car to go to school, and we see her saddle shoes for the first time.
Yeah.
Cooper is awoken by his alarm. He has the cowlick again. He tells Diane, well, actually, he reaches over, and first his hands touch his gun, and then he grabs the tape recorder, and he starts to tell Diane about his dream of eating a large, tasteless gumdrop. He details his current symptoms, which are a result of his recently being shot in the ribs. He has begun treating his wounds with yoga, and then he begins his morning with a headstand. He begins to focus, which allows him to finally discover Audrey's letter. Now he knows where she is located.
Finally.
Did you think it was significant that he touched his gun first? Like maybe the last time he had a cowlick, maybe his gun wasn't so close to him because he hadn't been shot yet. I can't remember the details, but I did wonder if that was on purpose.
Yeah, we'd have to go back and watch. I don't know. Are you saying that there could be possibly a correlation between the cowlick and gunplay at some point?
No.
No.
What I'm trying to say is it's the last time we saw him with a cowlick, he was probably still feeling safe and enamored with Twin Peaks. He hadn't been shot yet.
Oh. But it seems like his gun's just kind of in the way. Like he's going to turn the alarm off and then he goes to grab for Diane.
Right.
And his gun's just kind of an obstacle.
Didn't we have a discussion where he, because we talked about how he named his tape recorder and not his gun.
Mm.
And like that somehow like represented him as a lawman. And then now he's like, when he reaches, his gun's like there first before his tape recorder. And I think it's because he's been shot. It has nothing to do with the cowlick. The cowlick is only there because we're actually seeing him wake up.
Circumstantial evidence. So you could say that like the shine is off of Twin Peaks a little bit in his mind.
Yeah. Okay, so now Hawk pulls into the sheriff's department. He still cannot find anyone in Pearl Lakes who has any memory of a gray-haired man. He really has to pee because he drank a lot of chamomile tea to get that piddly amount of information that he got.
Yeah, apparently he had to hang out with these retired lesbian school teachers for like hours and drink pot after pot of chamomile tea. Don't look at me like that.
Did he say lesbian?
He said that they were two retired female school teachers. Do the math.
Okay, sure.
If anyone disagrees with me, I'd love to hear from you. Please defend this scene and tell me why they are retired heterosexual.
They could have been old Victorian ladies.
Sure. Okay. Well, if you can make a strong case for that, write us at the Gmail address and let me know.
Harry tells Hawk we need to find the one-armed man, and we actually have some feedback on this, so I'll refrain from commenting on this just yet. I don't know if you have anything to say.
It's kind of a Captain Obvious moment, you know? It's kind of like when you're about to go towards your task that you have to do for the day and you know you have to do it and your boss tells you to go do it right while you're
Yes.
going to do it and you're just kind of like, all right, whatever. You know, but I think Hawk's not the kind of guy to sass back and he really has to pee, so
Yeah.
that's more
Doesn't
important.
have time for sass.
Yeah.
So Lucy approaches Harry and she tells him that she is going to visit her sister Gwen. Harry hurries her out, even though she's insisting on going over office protocol with the can-do temp girl. Because sometimes the can-do girls can't.
Who hasn't shown up yet?
No, and she never shows up.
She was never intended to show up, but they weren't going to tell Lucy who was going to do it. She never would have left.
But Cooper arrives and tells Lucy to have a good trip, and then he tells Harry that he knows where Audrey is. So.
He doesn't really explain. It's kind of like one of those moments. You remember when he woke up from his dream and he's like, "I know who killed Laura Palmer," and he's like, "Yes, it can wait until
Yeah.
the morning." You leave us in suspense, and it almost seems to leave Harry in suspense, even though he could have told him off screen right after that. But I guess you just don't really know.
It's a callback scene, maybe.
Yeah, it was also a callback scene to have Hawk come in and kind of rattle off a bunch of information and then go, "I really have to go pee," because
Yeah,
that's what
that's
Coop
true.
did too, I think, in the second episode.
Yeah.
It was either the first actual episode after the pilot or the second episode. I
So they're
can't
like,
remember
they're
which.
already being self-referential. So Squiggy, Mr. Pinkle, is demonstrating equipment that will aid Shelley and Bobby in the care of Leo. The equipment is not working properly, which upsets Bobby. He sends Shelley out to get Squiggy a drink, and he confronts Squiggy about the chaos. Squiggy says the insurance company does not pay like slot machines, and that after the cuts that his company takes, there is not much money left but for that machine or a wheelbarrow, basically. So it sounds like Bobby and Shelley are getting scammed, which is not surprising because they're young kids, don't know what the hell they're doing.
Yeah, they're in over their head in this scam business. But as far as this scene, it's just kind of, it's the only, like I mentioned earlier, I like this episode better than last week's because there's not a lot of goofy humor in it, and this is the only time you see it. They relegated that part of the Twin Peaks experience to this 3 or 4 minute scene, and I appreciated it.
Well, Shelley also has to go meet with Leo's lawyer, and I think this is important because she asks Bobby if they are okay before she goes to meet. And I'm getting the impression that she asks him this because this is her last chance to bail on this particular situation, to where she can say to the lawyer, I'm not gonna take up for Leo.
Right.
And Bobby distracts her with kisses. It's like he's acting like Josie in this way.
Yeah, that's a good point. I didn't think of that.
And then we've already talked about it. Squiggy ends up in a predicament. That's how the scene ends.
Now, do you think that she's also, this is her last chance, but I think it's also, I think the seriousness of the situation is really starting to kind of come into focus for her. So she's like, "Are we okay? Because I don't want to be going through this alone." You know, she's going to have to take care of an invalid husband who tried to murder her. I mean, that's a shitty situation.
Yeah, I mean, she can see in front of her that this equipment's not even gonna make things easier. It might
No,
make things
it
worse,
exactly. It might
actually.
make it harder.
So yeah, I think the wheels are turning in her head. This is probably not gonna be what Bobby says. At the Bang Bang Bar, Leland and Leo's trials are about to be underway. With Leland's trial, which is what we're getting in this scene, Harry speaks on Leland's behalf. Judge Sterwin grants Leland release on his own recognizance. The judge requires him to not leave town and to make the sheriff department know where he is at all times.
That's pretty standard, I think.
Is
Because,
it?
yeah, they wouldn't do that if you were like what's called a flight risk. If they let you go on your own recognizance, you were just going to jet out of there and never be seen again. But you still have to kind of have people keeping tabs on you to a certain extent just to make sure that you're going to be available for when the trial actually starts.
Is there any practical reason why you would want peanut shells all over the floor?
Is there a practical reason
Does
for
it have
that?
like a natural bug repellent in it?
That I don't know. It could be an
Wondering.
odor repellent, but I think it's done mostly just to help up with janitorial duties because it soaks up fluids that
Oh,
might be
yeah.
spilled on the floor, whether that ranges from water to alcohol to soda to vomit. And it is a bar. And
Just curious.
yeah.
Okay, so moving on, unless you had something else to say.
No.
So Donna delivers Harold his meal. He has a glass of wine in hand when she arrives. She offers him to tell him something of her life if he lets her read Laura's diary. He says he will read it to her and that the diary should not leave this room. So she's to tell her story first, but she only really starts to tell it when she asks him where he is from. And he says he grew up in Boston. Well, actually, he grew up in books. She then says, "You cannot get everything in books." And he says, "You cannot get everything in life. You can sometimes dream that what you want exists in others." She suggests that their dreams could be real. And then she grabs the diary and attempts to lead him outdoors, which she does with minute success. He collapses onto the pavement. And any thoughts on
I
that?
like this scene for two reasons. The first reason being that I really like what he says because he's like, well, in books mostly. And she's like, well, you can't get everything from books. And he's like, well, you can't get everything from life. And sometimes we think we can get it from other people, but really we're just fooling ourselves. And that's it's pretty it's almost borderline nihilistic in a way, you know what I mean? But it's also it's pretty insightful as far as human nature is concerned, because unfortunately it's like that a lot of time. You know what I mean? It's just the very lucky few that are able to find everything that they need in other people. And and then the second reason I like the scene is because it reattaches us in a way to that creepy, weird, otherworldly element of Twin Peaks, because when he comes out of the door and he looks up and his right arm starts to make this clasping motion or grasping motion rather, and then he just kind of falls down and has this like panic attack or agoraphobia or whatever it is, it kind of lets me know as a viewer that there's something else going on that could be possibly supernatural and linked with the town, other than and we never get any conclusive evidence of this, but it's just watching it again. This is probably the third time I've seen this episode ever, and it looks like there's something else going on. Like he's almost receiving some stuff from pure air.
And I focused on this because of our feedback, which I'll get to, but how it looked to me is that his right arm is, I don't know if it's in reaction to being outdoors, seemed to react, and then it seemed like his left arm kind of lost something too, and then he collapses, and it's almost like his left arm comes up to his left ear and like he's hearing something or trying not to hear something. But
So,
that's how I read it. You know, he's kind of like shaking his
yeah.
head a little bit.
So, as far as speculation is concerned, we could say he could be receiving, like, when he leaves the comfort and security or protection possibly of his house, he might start to get bombarded with like emanations or transmissions from the
Yeah,
lodge, you
maybe
know?
you know what our listener wrote in last podcast, our last episode, when we were discussing Laura's secret diary, when he was is Jubel.
Jubel, yeah, we never really got a knew how to pronounce his name accurately. So once again, we hope we're not mangling it. Sorry.
But maybe what he was saying about these communications, maybe he's sensing these, maybe just a huge onslaught of it.
And you know,
And that's why he doesn't go outside ever.
Cooper is a strong sender, and perhaps Harold is a strong receiver.
Right, and that's why he stays
Yeah,
indoors.
and that's why he stays indoors. So I just like that because, you know, we can sit here and speculate about it all day. It's fun, but you know, like I said, there's not really conclusive anything that tells us what that was. But I think that's what it was, and it's a good scene to me because it kind of links back, because you feel like you're getting off the rails a little bit with the last couple episodes and the goofy humor and stuff like that, and then this brings it back to that creepy element of the lodge and stuff. So I liked it for that. Man, Donna's got to feel like crap after that, though.
She should,
Yeah.
even though she's rocking a cute outfit.
Yeah, she was dressed pretty
She
sharply.
shouldn't feel like crap about that. Okay, Leo's trial is now at hand. Leo's lawyer's defense tactic is based upon Leo's inability to stand trial in his vegetative state. The judge needs to deliberate. He asks Harry and Cooper to sit with him at the bar. Sid, by the way, is Clara Stansfield. She was Alty in Xena. Remember when Xena had to go to the Amazon Afterlife to get Gabrielle?
Oh
And
yeah.
then it was went back and forth from Xena's past, from back when she was with what's his name, the father of her son.
Yeah, I can't remember his name, but
Yeah, and then that witch-like lady that she had dealings with, Alty, and then she
okay.
ended up fighting with Alty, like during that berserk.
That was her?
Wasn't Alty involved with the berserker and stuff?
See, you've seen those episodes a couple of times. I've only seen them once.
Anyway, that's her.
Huh.
And she looks a lot different now. Or, I mean, that's not even now. That's even
That's even
a long
earlier
time
than
ago.
Xena, because that would have been before Xena.
Yeah, Twin Peaks is before Xena, but Xena still now is a long time ago.
Yeah,
But
that's true.
anyway, yeah, that's her. So anyway, Cooper seems wary of that drink, I noticed.
He didn't drink it.
No, he
He does
didn't.
not. He
He
sniffs it a
toys with
couple
the
of times.
idea.
I was going to bring this up if you didn't. Everybody else drinks it. What is it called again? A
A
black.
black Yukon Sucker Punch, and it's a fictional drink.
Okay,
But there's
there's not.
people who
There's
have
not.
come up with their own recipes.
Huh, interesting.
Yeah.
So, but it's not a real world drink, so we don't know
No.
what's in it or why it would be a sucker punch. But the judge and Harry, they go to town on it. And Cooper, he's just kind of he's wary of it.
Yeah.
He sniffs it a couple of times. It almost reminds me of an animal because he's just
Does he drink alcohol?
he does because he was drinking a beer with Hawk, and they were talking about. He says, "Where do you think Laura Palmer's
That's
soul is?"
right,
He does drink alcohol, but he drinks it very sparingly. And he also was drinking when in the previous episode at the end of it when he's waiting for Harry to come up to him at the bar. So we have evidence of him drinking because he says, "Let me buy you a beer, Harry." So there's been a few instances of him drinking, but I think he's a very
Because he's on the job.
well, he's on the job. That's why he doesn't drink in this scene, number one. But I think even when he's not on the job, he's very reserved about that type of thing. I don't think he likes to lose control.
Well, I'm glad somebody's trying to stay in control in
Yeah.
this crazy town.
It is a crazy town. Now, before they get the drink, or no, it might not be before they get the drink. I think I'll let you go ahead and go with the rest of the. There's one thing I wanted to say, but I'll wait till you come up.
After some questioning from Judge Sternwood, Cooper tells him that he does not believe that Leo Johnson is the man they are looking for, and Harry tells him that the town just wants the right man brought to justice. Therefore, the judge decides that Leo is not competent to stand trial. He tells Harry to tell Shelley. Harry walks away, and he asks Cooper how long has he been in Twin Peaks. Just 12 days, it turns out.
That's what I was going to make reference to because that means that every single episode up until now has been one day of
Yeah.
Cooper's stay in town, which is crazy
It is.
because sometimes you get the feeling that it has been one day to the next, and other times it feels like there's been a week of time that's probably lapsed.
And you think about the relationships that Cooper has made with people in 12 days.
Yeah.
But, under circumstances, I've been on trips, like I can remember in school where, we had to be pushed through obstacle courses and when you're in circumstances like that, there's a bonding experience that happens. So I would say all the stuff that's going on around Laura's death could be a bonding experience, especially for him and Truman.
Maybe that was Laura's just main purpose in life that she didn't know about was to bring all these really cool people together and have their
Maybe.
lives collide, you know? If it
Aw.
wasn't for Laura Palmer, Albert and Truman would never be the BFFs that they are today.
That's true.
Think about that.
Thanks for sacrificing, Laura. So to end the scene, Judge Sternwood tells Cooper to keep his eyes on the woods, and then Shelley does not look joyful about Leo's imminent return.
Nope, she's caught in a trap of her own making.
Ed and Nadine arrive home. Nadine does not recognize James. Nadine still thinks she's a high schooler, and she wants to know where her parents are, and Ed tells her that they're out of town.
She seems a little bit taken with James, too. She's like, "You're not in my class, but I've seen you around." And it's just like, it's like, "All right, move along, move along." This I did say that the squiggy scene was the only comedic element in this episode, but this scene has a little bit of it too. Not over the top too bad, but she does rip the refrigerator door off with one arm.
Yeah, and before she does that, when she steps out of the room, James asks Ed about taking her to see Dr. Jacoby, but it turns out Dr. Jacoby is in Hawaii.
Recuperating from his heart attack, is that what they said? Or his attack?
His attack.
Okay, not heart attack, yeah.
And then Nadine, tears the door off the refrigerator. It just came right off.
We're getting off light with this storyline in this episode. That's all I'm saying.
So Ben is visited by Mr. Tajimura. Mr. Tajimura is offering to buy the Ghostwood Estates for $5 million. Ben is uninterested until he sees the check. Hank is on his way through the hall of the Great Northern to meet Ben. Bobby seems to be following Hank. Bobby dodges quickly out of sight before Cooper rounds the corner.
Everybody just missing each other by a hair's breadth.
Cooper is happily oblivious, blowing on his duck whistle quacky thing. I don't know what that is.
Do you think that that is the finished product of what he was making earlier in
No,
the
I think he
seasons?
made a whistle, then he made something
Oh,
else.
okay. So this is a separate thing
I
altogether.
guess if you could make that out of wood, but
Yeah, I don't
yes.
know. It
I
seems like there would have to be some sort of metal on there.
have no idea.
Yeah.
He could insert the metal piece, thingamajigger.
Thingamajigger. Yeah.
Hank tells Ben that Cooper is on his way. The phone rings, and it is the call Cooper and Ben are waiting for. I like how Cooper's sitting on the couch. He's in the total power position there.
The alpha pose.
Yep, emanating confidence. Jean is on the line. After Cooper's prompt, Ben says he wants to speak to his daughter. Jean says that can wait. Jean describes a creepy sounding amusement park for the briefcase to be dropped off at, as if.
A failed amusement park behind a bar somewhere in.
With a horse statue with its head off? Or am I getting that from something else?
No, that was
Okay.
it, yeah.
Is that from Parks and Rec? I can't remember. So he hangs up at this point. Ben prepares a briefcase for Cooper with the serialized denominations, which was as was instructed by Cooper. Ben tells Cooper that his daughter is in his hands. After Cooper leaves, he tells Hank to follow him. He also tells Hank that Cooper will not be coming back, and if he can manage it, bring back Audrey and the briefcase. He is pretty happy about his $5 million check. He seems to not be too stressed out by all these events that are about to happen, and he pulls out that check, and it's like he's forgotten that he just had this conversation with Cooper and Hank.
And then he folds the check in too, which I thought was kind of a weird thing to do. I don't know. I mean, you're not destroying anything when you fold something in half like that. It's not like they're gonna go, "We can't cash this, sir. You folded it in half." It's not like that, but I just thought that was a little bit odd. But you're exactly right. He does seem a little bit flippant about this.
Yeah.
He's just like, "Hey, make sure he gets my daughter, then make sure you bring her back and bring the money back if you can, and we'll do lunch later on."
Everybody else would be fretting. Any
Yeah.
other parent would be. So Donna talks to Maddie and describes to her where the diary is hidden. The plan is for Maddie to sneak in and take it when Donna gives her the signal. Maddie says to her, "I thought you liked this guy."
Yeah, it's Donna's being very reckless in this episode. This whole endeavor is a bad idea. It's a really bad idea. Now, tell me what you think of this. This would have been an even better scene to have Maddie dress like Laura and try to entice him. But see, he wouldn't have left the house anyway because he's physically incapable of doing so. So I really don't know how that would have worked. But it seemed like they should have saved that for this scene. Because he was so, I think he was in love with Laura, and he's keeping that diary obviously as like his own personal private part of her that nobody else got to see, and he's doling it out to Donna only because she's her, her best friend, and because he's interested in her story as well.
I just don't think Maddie would do it at this point because she's so frustrated with being compared or thought of as Laura.
Yeah, you're probably right, and it's.
And it had like such bad results.
It did, yeah. She
Dr.
probably doesn't want
Jacoby
to
ended
see
up in
that.
the hospital and
Yeah. Not that this particular excursion ends in really anything better,
no, it
but it's
ends
actually
up worse.
worse.
Yes. So Jean is showing Blackie his Bond villain weapon. It is his plan for Cooper, and she wants to know his plans for Ben and Audrey. She seems concerned about him wanting to kill Audrey. He tells her she needs to be serious about her business. Blackie's sister enters the room, and this is Blackie's cue to exit after she steals some heroin. After Blackie leaves, Nancy, which is the name of Blackie's sister, she asks Sean, "What about my sister? What about Blackie?" Apparently, she wants her sister dead.
Now,
I don't really care about her.
I agree. I don't like her sister at all, but she asks Jean how he's going to kill Audrey, and he points to the rubber tie-off and the needle,
Yeah.
basically saying we're going to administer an overdose. And they're like, "Oh, there's worse ways to go. That's pretty good." And but she takes the dope before she leaves,
Or some of it. I don't know
or
if she.
some of it. I mean, does she take? Is she like trying to disable this plan, or does she just see some, H and it's just like, "I'm taking that with me"?
I think it's that the latter.
Okay.
I know I'm cynical, but yeah.
No, I was just curious about your honest opinion of it. I didn't
That's what I
know,
think.
because it does obviously, we know a few scenes later, none of that gets followed up on, but it just crossed my mind.
So Andy's covering for Lucy at the sheriff's department. Andy calls Doc Hayward for his test results, and it turns out Andy is a whole damn town. And he tells this to a perplexed Harry.
And we see exactly why Lucy never would have left if she knew that Andy was going to be filling in for her. He's not capable of doing this job. He's got post-it notes all over his body and pretty much all over the glass and all over the desk and everything else.
And meanwhile, crime's just happening like crazy out there because people are calling and
Well,
he's just
Andy's not
writing
there
it
to
down and
stop him.
sticking it to his body.
Yeah. He's not out there to be Twin Peaks'
Yeah,
Peter Parker
that
and
too.
stop the crime.
It's a double failing. So Harry meets with Cooper in his office to discuss their plans to rescue Audrey. They look over the blueprints of One-Eyed Jack's. Hawk comes in to update them about what he has found about the one-armed man. Harry tells Hawk they will see him in the morning.
And Hawk leaves without saying anything, or just he's just like, "All right, yeah, see you in the morning."
Seems like a look transpires between Harry and Hawk, but
Honestly, I had forgotten the extent of which Hawk was involved in this. I knew that he came back in
right, you
the end.
remembered that part.
I remembered that part, but I couldn't remember if Harry had kind of clued him in and said, "Listen, I need you to be the third wheel here and help us out."
Because it looks like there's a look that transpires between them.
Exactly. It looks like that's a very loaded "see you in the morning." Like,
Yeah.
this is your cue to pretend that you're leaving, but really get ready for tonight. You
Yeah.
know, that's exactly how that played.
Yeah, it
But
did.
that's apparently not it,
Nope.
because as we find out later, Harry didn't know.
Cooper tells Harry how they will approach the casino. Harry says, "Let's go get her." They say goodbye to Andy. Andy tries to call a number that he thinks belongs to Lucy's sister. The number is for an abortion clinic. OMG.
Oh, yeah.
Maddie is picking up coffee from the Double R when she runs into James. She claims the coffee is for Leland and that she needs to just go. She is being very evasive and she leaves.
She's being very evasive, but I also get the impression that even though she's standing right next to him, literally right next to him, that if he hadn't said anything, she just would have paid for the coffee and left
Yeah.
and not said anything at all. And then James would have to go back to the Hurley residence and, you know, go back to his little shack behind Big Ed's gas barn and write the saddest, most morose song you've ever heard.
With black ink on black paper.
Yeah. In a black light.
He follows her though, instead of doing that.
Thank God.
He's proactive. Maddie is watching outside Harold's apartment as instructed by Donna. She's using her coffee to keep warm. It wasn't for Leland after all.
Lying bitch.
Donna is telling Harold the story she promised him. She tells a story about her and Laura. When they were 13, they encounter some 20-year-old men, three of them. And you can actually read about this version in Laura's secret diary. It's pretty explicit in some ways. Even reading as an adult, it's shocking to me. And especially knowing that David Lynch asked his daughter to write this. I just imagine her like writing it and him reading it, being like, "Good job, kiddo."
You did great. We'll never speak of this again. Now, all right, I've got a question. This is from, you can read the story that Donna is talking about to Harold in the published Laura Palmer secret diary,
Yes.
but obviously that's in the diary that the
Harold
police,
has.
if it's in the diary that Harold has, why doesn't he already know this story? Or is that why he's not writing it down? Because he's already read it. And now he believes Donna, or he's just reveling in her, like bringing a story that he's already read about to life. Because there's two diaries, right? There's the diary that's in the possession of the police as evidence, and then there's the diary that he has.
It is the secret diary.
That answers my question, because the question I had is if one diary is in, you know, police evidence, and then the other diary is at Harold's house, the secret diary is at Harold's house. So the one that Harold has is the one that they published and put out for public consumption. So if that story's in there, the one that David Lynch's daughter wrote, Harold already knows this story. So that's why he's not writing it down. Because if you notice, he's holding his wine, and you can see both of his hands at all times, I think, in this scene, and he's just listening to her tell it. I'm just asking you if, in your opinion, do you think that's why he's not writing anything down?
I think he was taken with the story. And yeah, he's probably, I don't know how many times he's read that diary. He
Yeah.
may have obsessed over it, but She tells it in such a compelling way. I like listening to it every time she tells it.
Okay, all that aside, what I'm asking you is he has her in there to write down the story of her life. That's what he's hungry to do.
I think
But
he's going to write it down later. He's getting the sentiment, and he's probably going to write it in his own words.
I'm thinking he doesn't need to write it because he already knows this story. He's just getting it from Donna's perspective rather than Laura's perspective, and that's why he didn't write a single thing down. He just sat there enraptured with the way she was telling it, sipping his wine,
But
and
Donna's perspective is
different enough.
yeah, because the way Donna reacted to the situation is completely different than the way Laura did.
Oh, yeah, I'm
And Laura
sure.
was aware of how Donna was acting.
Yeah.
Donna ended up becoming really reserved toward the end of the night and keeping to herself.
So 13-year-old girls probably have a tendency to be a little reticent around 20-year-old guys, unless you're Laura Palmer and it just means sex time. But whatever. That's Laura Palmer. What can you do?
Yes, that is Laura Palmer. Because she was already having sexual relations with Bob at that point, or at least,
A year, at least a year.
yeah.
Because in Fire Walk With Me, she says he's been having me since I
I
was
was
12.
12. Harry and Cooper scout out the casino. Cooper spies an owl.
The owl spies him.
And he looks, he almost has a look of consternation on his face when he realizes, hey, it's an owl.
Yeah.
Harry takes down a guard by grabbing him by the balls, and then he puts a frickin' ball in his mouth and duct tape over it. It's totally thematic for One Eye Jacks. Like, this is how you take down a guard in One Eye Jacks, right?
I didn't think of that. Yeah, but he's got some like 50 Shades of Harry Truman going
Yeah,
on with
no
this
shit.
scene, and he just like smacks his head, and it opens the door and everything, and it's goofy, cartoony kind of cinema violence, I guess, for lack of a better term. But it's way better than the Hank Jennings and Jonathan scene from last
Yeah.
episode. Way better.
So they enter and they begin their descent down a staircase. They manage to keep unseen as they make their way through the hallway. They spy Jean and Blackie. They have Cooper on freeze frame on the television in the room they're in. Blackie is asking Jean when what can her sister do for him that she can't? And he said something new. Such a jerk. Back with Harold and Donna, he is talking about his orchids. They begin to kiss, and he gets really weird about it and has to excuse himself. This gives Donna the opportunity to signal Maddie.
Now, this scene was kind of it was sweet. It actually I felt like if she wasn't there to, I mean, she does like him to a certain extent, right? And we can safely assume
I don't
that.
know why. I think he's creepy.
Oh, definitely.
God.
Yeah, definitely. He's like big hands creepy. You know what I mean? Like oversized hands. It's
Are his hands oversized?
No, but I just get that feeling from him. Like he'd have like really big but like feminine hands at the same time. It's hard to explain, but don't read too much into it. But so they have this scene together where it seems like they're sharing a tender moment, you know what I mean? And then he stops and pulls away and he's like, "Excuse me, I'll be right back." And the whole time I'm just thinking, and then I jizzed in my pants, 'cause I don't that's how that played to me. And I'm wrong. He just wanted to go get a clipping, but go ahead.
That's what he left to go do, was go get a
When
clipping.
he came back, he was like, this is for you, and he had a clipping of an orchid.
Huh.
So, I mean, unless I'm right
Don't
about the other thing.
know. I'm leaning towards that. But anyway, so yeah, the sig she signals Maddie, and now we're back with Cooper, and he's intercepting Nancy, and he strong arms her into locating Audrey. When they get to Audrey, Nancy claims it was not her idea, and then she soon after tries to stab Cooper. He takes her down by punching her in the gut. Meanwhile, Jean kills Blackie. Harry watches. When he looks over towards Harry, he licks the blood off his lips. He's nasty. And Harry takes a shot at him, but Jean runs off. Cooper arrives with Audrey, and they begin their exit when they are stopped by a guard. Luckily, they cannot keep a secret from Hawk. Hawk takes the guy down with a knife. Hank sees everything, and he calls Ben to report. He is then snuck up from behind by Jean, and Jean now thinks he is Darryl Lodewick.
FBI agent, right? Or is he no special
prosecutor.
investigator or prosecutor?
It's a prosecutor.
Does it
He's the
say he is the prosecutor?
prosecutor. It's the guy whose wallet he stole.
So yeah, it's in his wallet, so he's gonna believe it. So
Yeah.
he thinks he's got some sort of a government official here.
Back at Harold's, Donna continues to distract him, but only briefly because Maddie makes a noise. Harold grabs a cultivator and Donna runs screaming for Maddie. She and Maddie embrace when he stands there threateningly, talking about Laura, knowing the secret of who killed her. This is a clue that Laura was well acquainted with her killer.
Now, before we...
Then he claws his face with the cultivator. End of scene.
Before the scene, I forgot to mention when Donna is relating her part of the underage swimming pool story, or not swimming pool, but the underage lake story, she's smoking a cigarette.
Right.
And this is a prelude to her recklessness.
Mm-hmm.
And to focus in on that, at the very, the last ash of her cigarette just hits the floor and the camera focuses in on that. So we know it's going to be something big and over the top. And this is what it is. You know, the smoking is a sign of a character being reckless. And in this case, it ends up with Harold scratching himself with a cultivator.
It ends up worse than that next episode.
True. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how many cigarettes she smoked between then and then, but she made it worse.
So anything else you want to say about this?
James did follow them, but he doesn't show up in this episode again.
No, he doesn't show up till the very beginning of the next episode.
Okay.
He shows up there.
So we've got the clean getaway with Hawk, Harry, and Audrey and Cooper.
Right.
And then Hank is now in the possession of Jean.
Yes.
And we've got a cultivator going down the face of Harold.
Yes.
And Maddie and Donna are clinging to each other. And it's all very cliffhangery because all these threads get picked up the very next day because, as we can assume, you know, episode 13 is going to be day 13. So I guess it just keeps going in that fashion until we see different. You know what I'd like to know, though, is if somebody could go back and watch the whole series again with that in mind. I'm sure somebody has. Are there any discrepancies that kind of give the lie to that? I wonder if there's anything that you could pinpoint that's kind of like an inconsistency in the story that would show you that, no, there had to be 2 days here between this episode and this episode because things A, B, and C happened. I'm just wondering.
Maybe.
Because it seems like an idea that somebody came up with just for that episode, because the judge makes a point to ask Cooper and he says 12 days. This is the 12th episode total. So just curious.
It would also mean that, you know, Donna and everybody and Bobby, they're not missing that much school.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I used to skip school a lot. And 13 days, I mean, because you got weekends in there too.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not really a whole lot of time.
And they're probably going some of the time, not, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we know James has had to go at least a little bit because, what's her name? Nadine has seen him at school, right? Or is she just remembering this because she knows him as a person? She
yeah,
knows
I think
face.
Her mind is tickled by his
okay.
face and she's
yeah.
like,
that's probably more
I
accurate.
I recognize
right.
you from somewhere. It must be school. So I'm going to go ahead and get into feedback.
Sure.
Okay. It's from Daniel. This is our only feedback this episode. Hey, Em and Steve. This is a pretty exciting little episode, and it definitely stands out as having the most action violence out of the entire series. Any ideas why the episode might have been given the title The Orchid's Curse when it aired in Germany? Is it just because Harold raises orchids and is weirdly trapped in that house? That bizarre scene where his hand starts shaking looks just like what happens to several other denizens of the town, including Cooper, in the second to last episode much later. Just before we see Bob's arm materializing out of the grove, is it the same phenomenon? Do you want to touch on that before I move on?
Well, I haven't heard, you know, I didn't actually read Daniel's feedback, and I'm hearing it for the first time now,
right.
basically. So, yeah, all I really have to say about that is what I've already said about when he came out of the house. I think that is a link to the lore about the lodge and stuff. You know, he's receiving possibly some sort of transmission, or there's some sort of phenomenon that goes on with the shaking of the arms and the numbness of the arms. And I don't know how to suss all that out, like what each individual symptom means, in or even by itself or in relation to the other ones. But there's something there. There has to be. And yeah, that's it, I think.
Yeah, I don't really have anything else to add to that. I like the idea of the receiving transmissions at this point. So,
and it's a good point, too, about the violence. I didn't really think about that. But, like, if you, in one single episode, this probably has the most
mm-hmm.
physical action that's going on.
Harry taking down that guard, grabbing his balls. Okay, so I know, and this is, he's addressing you sort of here. He says, I know Steve likes Truman a lot, so I'll try to be gentle. But the beginning just screams out to me how it seems like Hawk does all the real police work while Sheriff Truman stuffs his face with donuts and coffee, taking all his hard-earned info, telling him good work, and giving him more shit to go out and do. Just good delegation or the plight of the Native American.
Oh, So that's food for thought right there.
It's
Don't.
funny because I read this and when I watched it, it's so blatant.
Yeah.
He's just sitting there munching on donuts and drinking coffee. He comes in, he's got to piss his pants practically, and he's telling like, "Hey, these ladies
Well,
told me this," and then he's got to go pee, and then Harry's like, "All right, well, make sure you find the one-armed man."
that's exactly what Daniel, I agree. It's exactly what I said because I said like he's being that boss who's telling you to do something that you're already doing. That, everybody has a boss who has a job who's listening to this, unless you're self-employed, and you understand that phenomenon. It's happened to you. If it doesn't happen to you on a daily basis, it's at least weekly. And your boss is telling you to do something, you're already doing it. It's the most fucking infuriating thing in the world. It's like, you're paying me, right? I'm competent enough to do this job. And Harry is, I do, you're right. I do like Harry. I more like him when he reflects off of Cooper. I like their friendship and I like the mutual respect they have as lawmen. And I think Harry's a good guy underneath everything, and that's why I hate it when Josie messes with him so much. But as far as being a lawman, he's not exemplary. You're absolutely right. He's not exemplary. And he really is just, he's delegating, but it's almost like these people would go ahead and do whatever. Hawk knows what the hell he's doing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He saved their asses at the end of this
Without
episode.
Harry telling him to.
Yeah, if Hawk didn't know what he was doing, that bald dude at One-Eyed Jack's had the drop on those guys.
Yeah.
So they'd be in the custody of Jean until they died. And
On
he
to
does eat a lot of donuts too.
he does.
Not the bald guy, but Harry.
I'm gonna move on to the next point. I'll let
Sure.
you go. Okay. So when Mr. Pinkle, and this, I'm gonna continue with Daniel's letter. He says, when Mr. Pinkle is selling his wacky chair contraption, he says, "Sometimes you gotta hit it hard. A machine is like a woman. We always say that the mean sh machine shop." That line takes on a rather dark tone when you consider that he is saying that to Shelley, of all people, in the Johnson house, where Leo repeatedly beat and abused her.
I meant to bring that up when we were covering it the first time, but I just kind of passed this scene off as just being a comical holdover from the theme from last episode. But Daniel's absolutely right. That is kind of and I didn't notice it the first time that I watched it, or maybe even the second time that I watched it, but this time I did notice it, and I kind of expected a little bit more of a reaction out of her.
She had a look on her face when I remember she has this like look like, "What are you about to say?" And he doesn't finish his sentence.
Okay.
So
And Bobby doesn't do anything either, really.
Bobby's distracted by other issues,
Yeah.
I think.
Bobby's going to take care of everything, Shelley. Don't worry about that.
So seeing Mr. Tajimura's aide, who we first saw way back near the end of season one, checking into the room down from Cooper's when Audrey is on her way out to One-Eyed Jack's, always makes me wonder why we were shown that character so early. I have to agree. I remember I originally thought he could have been a candidate for Cooper's shooter, but I guess Catherine must have been planning this con against the Horns for a while, seeing as how it would require fake papers, dummy corporations, and Japanese bank work. Maybe Andrew Packard helped her out of that little shack he's hiding in. In the original script for this episode, there is a bizarre but hilarious scene where Mr. Tajimura goes to the Double R and Norma thinks he's the food critic, but Hank mistakes him for the assailant from the night before. So he shoves Mr. Tajimura's face into a plate of mashed potatoes before realizing it's the wrong guy. That's so goofy.
That scene definitely should have been cut. It was, and for good reason, because if that was the same guy that kicked his ass the night before, there's Hank would have been scared as hell to get anywhere near him. My explanation for this scene is think, think, think. That's what Catherine said whenever that guy came to her with the papers.
Yeah, because if I remember correctly, she stumbles through the woods, walking to the cabin. She didn't know Andrew Packard was there. She didn't even know he was still alive.
Right.
So she couldn't have.
This was her idea. And
Yeah.
what she did was, remember, she's going, think, think, think. And she's really, really worried about it. Well, the next episode, you see that guy. She started working right away. This was behind the scenes, off camera. We had no way of knowing about it until now, till it all kind of comes together. But this was her idea, and she was already going to do this hijinks with the paperwork and everything. So this is just her plan come to fruition. And she got the ball.
It's a complicated plan,
It
man.
is, but it's also very soap opery, and it fits in with the soap opery theme of season two of Twin Peaks, I think.
So moving on, Daniel says Donna's story is a little unsettling when you think about it, albeit beautifully delivered by the actress. Two 13-year-old girls getting naked and making out with three 20-year-old guys? Question mark. Yes, it's even more disturbing in the diary.
Yeah, I pretty much exhausted my opinion on this when we talked about it at the appropriate time in the episode, but the only thing I can say is just creepy. Just creepy.
And he says, I love how Cooper waits for just the right moment and has no qualms about punching Nancy straight in the gut and taking her down cold. Also, that punch sends Nancy right out of the show because we never see her ever again. Which is a loose end.
Well, do we know what happens to One-Eyed Jax after everything gets taken down? Because
I guess not.
John is out of the picture, Blackie's dead, and then Ben Horn is in his loopy little, like world of his own in his own mind. You know what I mean? Proving that he's Johnny Horn's father, I guess. You know, I guess the genetics ran down from his side of the family with that. But yeah, is One-Eyed Jax in totality a loose end? In and of itself, I don't know.
I can't remember.
Maybe she takes over the operation because, she gets up after that punch and she's just like, well, I'm the only one standing or sitting.
And then finally, Daniel says, Harold says that the ultimate secret is in that Laura knew it, the secret of knowing who killed you. Do you think that was intended as a clue to the viewers that Laura knew who killed her, knew him personally, and that intimately, since her killer was her own father, in fact? Did Harold come to suspect this, or does he, in fact, know? I don't know if Harold knows, but yes, I do believe it was a clue.
Agreed. Yeah, I'm not really sure if he knows who the killer was, but he knows that Laura knows who it was. He understood her probably towards the end better than anyone else because of the, I think she felt a certain she I think she treated him like a therapist. I mean, she was seeing Dr. Jacoby in a professional manner and then maybe a not so professional manner in other ways, but I think she felt most at home talking to Harold.
Somehow she was able to keep him secret
Yeah.
from Bob.
And that gave and all her friends and family. So that gave her a license to be able to say anything she wanted to him. So he probably knows more about a lot of stuff than anybody else does. I mean, we've all learned these clues since then, but he knew them way back in Fire Walk With Me. So
And Daniel says, thanks again for a damn fine podcast. I love your show.
thank you, Daniel. Thank you very much.
And we love you, Daniel. Yeah, it was one thing I didn't mention, but we did talk about it while we were watching, is the scene where Cooper and Harry are making their way through the hallway of One-Eyed Jack's. It really reminded me of the scene in Fire Walk With Me when she puts the picture up of the doorway and she ends up walking through and Mrs. Tremond is, gesturing for her to,
beckoning her to
yeah.
come. Yeah, that's that exact bend right there, and the paperwork, or not the paperwork,
The
the
wallpaper.
wallpaper is there. Even though it's faded, it's the same wallpaper, and it's the entry into the.
But you have that association with that. If you watch Fire Walk With Me and then you watch this again, it gives us this eerie cast
Yeah.
over that hallway. Ugh.
And the funny thing about it is this obviously came way before. So it's almost like David Lynch went back and he said, I didn't write this episode, I didn't direct this episode, but I'm going to take this piece of visual from this episode and I'm going to use it in the movie.
I
So
don't know if
that's.
it really was the episode or it was a set, and the set had a significance and let's use.
That's probably more realistic. Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. I can go with that. Yeah, because it is a set. You're just taking a picture or a video of the set, so.
that was used, quite a bit.
Or maybe they had that set that was like it stayed part of it for whatever reason, and then they needed to find something else to do with it, or they were like, hey, this is still here from the scene where we had Harry and Cooper save Audrey, so let's use it.
So, anything else you want to say before we end this podcast?
I would just like to say thank you, Daniel, for writing us again. It's
Thanks,
awesome.
Daniel.
It's always nice to hear from you. You always give us insightful things to talk about, and that's awesome. And I'd like to say thank you to everybody who has downloaded us and everybody who has given us a rating on iTunes. We really, really appreciate it. Thanks, and keep listening.
Yes, and we will talk to you again next week. And we are starting our Vikings podcast this week. Vikings season 3 is beginning, and we're super excited about that. So if you like Vikings, you can join us with our friend Paul. All right, that was it. I am your host, Em.
And I'm your host, Steve.
We mean it like it is.
Like it sounds.
This was a No Ship Network podcast brought to you by Axolotl Tank Productions.